magic, and Shakespeare. Shasta College invites you to audition for A Midsummer Night's Dream, the classic romantic comedy full of tangled love triangles, enchanted forests, and hilarious chaos. Auditions are August 25th and 26th at 6 p.m. in the Shasta College Theater. Prepare a one-minute classical monologue, preferably comedic, from Shakespeare or the same period. Community members and students are welcome. For more information, call 530-242-7573. That's 530-242-7573. Step into the magic. Your role awaits.
Smoke and sap, dirt and grime, leaves and pollen, and even bugs. Just a few things that can possibly damage your vehicle's paint over time, causing it to pit, fade, and oxidize, basically ruining your paint job. Quick and Clean Car Wash can help. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading invites you to stop by and enjoy their all-cloth car wash. What'd it take the time to pre-wash and hand scrub your car or truck? Quick and Clean Car Wash also offers car wash packages. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
You know, the caution is that we can't rely on presidents. Administrations to dictate, you know, the spiritual condition of the country. You know, that's up to each and every single one of us.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Todd Starnes, Newsmax host, also national radio host and award-winning journalist, co-author of the new book, Star Spangled Blessings, Devotions for Patriots. We'll talk with him about the book later on in today's program. First, we're joined by Dr. Joseph Postel. He is Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College, author of the book Bureaucracy in America, The Administrative State's Challenge to Constitutional Democracy. Dr. Postel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
The book Bureaucracy in America is a couple of years old now, but still relevant, of course. We focus on a specific chapter today, Chapter 8, The Conservative Counter-Revolution. And we date this around the late 70s. But before we delve in, set the stage for us a bit, meaning around this time period, what does the administrative state look like back then? And what is the court's role in the administrative process at this point?
Okay, great. So this is, again, around the late 1970s, early 1980s, where you really start to see conservative judges and justices on the Supreme Court start to think very critically about the administrative state. So in order to understand their reaction, we have to really understand what's going on at this time. And you can almost divide our administrative state into two separate administrative states. You have the New Deal administrative agencies. Those the famous agencies in this category would be like the Federal Trade Commission, mm-hmm. Securities Exchange Commission, the Federal Reserve, the National Labor Relations Board. And all of these agencies have a few important characteristics. The first is that they are considered independent agencies. So these are people who the president can't actually fire, the heads of the agencies. They're commissions where you have an equal or close to equal number of Republicans and Democrats sitting on the board together, and they have to vote on matters. And then also, these agencies tend to have more judicial power. They decide cases and issue orders rather than making rules and regulations. And that's really the FDR New Deal approach to the administrative state. What happens in the 1960s and the 1970s through the Great Society and actually through Richard Nixon's presidency, you get a wave of new agencies. The Environmental Protection Agency, NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And these agencies are more political, so their heads are appointed by the president. They only have one head as opposed to being a commission. And they have rulemaking power. So they make rules and regulations that are sweeping across the entire economy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the second wave of agencies that you get in the Great Society and the Nixon period are actually much more expansive, much more powerful, and they do legislative work. And so what happens then is that the courts start to see their role in supervising the administrative state a little differently. Now that the administrative state has expanded so dramatically in the 60s and 70s, the courts start to see their role as trying to police the administrative state.
Mm-hmm.
And really, this starts actually among liberals. This part of the history is so fascinating because it runs contrary to where we are right now.
Right.
But think about who the presidents were in the 1970s, right? Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and then as you get into the 80s, Ronald Reagan. The judges, of course, had been appointed by this wave of Democratic presidents throughout the middle part of the 20th century. And so you had this conflict between the executive and the judiciary, but it was on lines that are very reversed from where we are today, where the executives were arguing for deference because they were wanting to roll back the administrative state, people like Reagan and Nixon. And the judges, who were more liberal, were basically devising legal doctrines that said, no, we the judges get to decide what happens at the end of this administrative process. We get to decide whether this transportation rule or this workplace safety rule is a good rule or not. And so what you start to see in the 70s is the liberal justices taking on a much more expansive role for judicial review, that the judges are going to decide what goes on in the administrative state and not the president of the United States. This leads to the conservative counter-revolution, which I find to be a somewhat ironic development, where the conservative judges and justices start to say, we actually think that the administrative agencies should get deference from the courts.
Why is Congress not more appalled by the way the administrative state's power has expanded? Meaning, why wouldn't Congress say, well, you don't get to interpret these things that we pass. We pass them in a specific way. So why isn't Congress more upset about all this?
Yeah. That's a million-dollar question. You're right. I'll be brief when I answer it. One very short part of the answer is that there used to be this thing called a legislative veto, where Congress could pass a disapproval resolution, and even if only one house of Congress passed it, a major agency's rule, or an agency's major rule, would just go away. The court struck down legislative vetoes in this big case called INS versus Chadha, and that has really stripped Congress of the ability to supervise what's going on in the administrative state. The problem really is that Congress is broken and Congress is a mess. Part of it is that Congress was supposed to be a mess. The problem is now, when Congress is slow and clunky and gridlocked, the EPA just goes and does what it wants. And so, in a way, the old checks and balances actually kind of work against us once you have an administrative state.
Talking with Dr. Joseph Postel, his book, Bureaucracy in America, the Chapter 8, Conservative Counter-Revolution discussion we're having today. One other case, Motor Vehicles Manufacturers Association v. State Farm. This is from the major questions doctrine established in this case, but it featured prominently in a recent Supreme Court decision to block some of the student loan forgiveness the Biden administration attempted to hand out. So what is this case involved, and how is it still relevant to issues like the student loan forgiveness cases?
Yes, so the major questions doctrine has been the big issue over the last few years. And it's this interesting new doctrine that's got its origins are contested. Some people say it's made up. Justice Kagan, in a dissent in a case called West Virginia versus EPA, called it a get-out-of-text-free card, where you can just ignore the text of a statute when you don't like the outcome. But essentially what the major questions doctrine says, and I think it's a good doctrine, it says that if an agency tries to assert power over a really major question, like forgiving everybody's student loans, or imposing a vaccine mandate on everybody who works for a company that has over 100 employees, that's a major question. And if an agency doesn't have the very clear and expressly given power to do such a thing, then the courts will say the agency doesn't have that power. Mm-hmm. They will not allow, this is a famous line from Justice Scalia, they will not allow for Congress to hide elephants in mouse holes. You can't take a small little statutory provision and turn it into, oh, we get to remake the entire economy or make everybody take a vaccine. And so what you've started to see is when a major question is addressed by an administrative agency, the courts will be much more skeptical that the agency actually has the power to deal with that unless Congress affirmatively gives the power to that agency. And so I think this is the right way to read laws, but many people don't like it because it's prevented their preferred policy from being enacted into law by an administrative agency.
The chapter on the conservative counter-revolution is essentially late 70s, early 80s. Does the fight against the administrative state today and some of these administrative rulemaking bodies still echo this fight from the chapter?
Interestingly, this is probably the biggest thing I would change if I wrote the book today. The book came out in 2017,
yeah.
So which meant it was mostly written by the time, it was essentially written by the time President Trump was inaugurated. And at that point, the conservatives were still in this posture of deference to the administrative state. We want the courts to stay out of the way of the administrative state. I think things have completely changed since then. And you're seeing conservatives be much more skeptical of the administrative state and much more willing to have courts second-guess the decisions of the agencies. There's nothing more symbolic in that transition than when Justice Scalia passed away. He was replaced by Justice Gorsuch. and Justice Gorsuch was the leading critic of Chevron, whereas, of course, Scalia was the leading defender of it. And so I think today the conservative position on the administrative state has changed, and for the better. I think conservatives now understand that the better solution to the problem of the administrative state is not to have the agencies get deference so that they can do the things that they want to do without being checked by another department or branch of government, but rather to reintroduce the checks and balances and to reintroduce sort of the rule of law into the administrative state. So I think this is all a very positive development.
Dr. Joseph Postel, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. The book he references, Bureaucracy in America, The Administrative State's Challenge to Constitutional Democracy. We talked today about Chapter 8, The Conservative Counter-Revolution. Dr. Postel, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, it's Todd Starnes, his new book, Star Spangled Blessings, Devotions for Patriots. We'll discuss next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Plan your day with the Sue McClain News Hour on KCNR. Your weekday weather forecast equips you to tackle any weather, rain or shine. Sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, a local champion delivering premium flour, edibles, and concentrates with free delivery to Shasta Lake. Their Flower Fridays deal runs all weekend until stock's gone, so grab it fast. Support local by visiting X, Facebook, or thequeenofdragons.com. KCNR keeps you in the loop every day.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday. Thursday right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Join us on X for updated show and guest information. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined once again by Todd Starnes, commentator, author, and radio host. You can find more of his work at toddstarnes.com. Todd, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Yeah, love talking to you, and always good to have an excuse to do so. That's the new book, Star Spangled Blessings, Devotions for Patriots, with your co-author, Michelle Cox. And I read this book, Todd, and it's not a children's book. Adults certainly benefit from it, but it can be used as a children's book or even a family book, and that's something that makes it pretty special.
Well, thank you. And that's what Michelle and I were really hoping for. This is our second devotion book we've written together. And Michelle and her husband live on a beautiful farm right outside of Asheville, and they have a number of grandkids. And so Michelle and I were really wanting to write a book that would be family friendly, that maybe the family could use in the morning time or maybe in the evening time to not only dig into God's Word, but also to understand the importance of Christianity and the founding of our nation, and really explore how God has blessed our nation over the years.
The main part of the book is broken into 50 chapters, Todd. There's a prayer for patriots in each chapter. There's a liberty lesson in each chapter. And then there's a Yankee Doodle. What the heck's that?
Yeah, we had a little bit of fun with the names. The Yankee Doodles are really thoughts and conversation starters, and they're meant to really, you know, spark maybe deeper conversations into our little devotions. You know, I really wanted to take people on this journey in the book, and explore some stories that people may not have known about people in the nation, whether they be presidents or, you know, regular Joes. And that's really, I think, the remarkable thing here is that we have to remember that the reason why America is great, and I believe it's the most exceptional nation on the earth, is not because of our politics, but it really is because of our faith in God. And I think over the years, we have seen a slide in that. We have seen the nation go down a slippery slope where we have really rejected God. We've put God on this, you know, on this shelf in the closet, and we haven't embraced, you know, the faith of our founding fathers. And that really is the call to action from our devotion book, is to get back to the faith of our founding fathers.
Todd Starnes with us, along with co-author Michelle Cox. The book is Star Spangled Blessings, Devotions for Patriots, and we can dig into a few of them here. Chapter 9 is From Generation to Generation, and it discusses how we teach our children and why we teach our children. You know, having kids, Todd, you think they're never paying attention. Their eyes are elsewhere. They're looking at something else. Are they actually hearing what you say? And then down the line, you'll hear them cite something you said, or in a best case scenario, refer to a Bible verse and say, that reminds me of that story. And you know what? They really are listening. It's an important thing.
It's so true. And that was one of the fun things about Michelle and I, you know, writing this book together, you know, sort of weaving our own experiences and our own take on things together. Hers, of course, from a grandmother, and mine from not being a grandmother. But it really is this idea of telling your children about who our founding fathers were, telling our children about our heritage. And that's something we used to do. That used to be the norm in this country. And I think we have to get back to that idea. And, you know, again, you know, we're working on some other projects that I think will really, you know, build on that idea of parents and grandparents taking up the responsibility of teaching their kids about our heritage.
Chapter 22 in Star Spangled Blessings, Seek God's Face. And I read this and I did what I think you hoped I would do, which is think a little deeper. And I thought about, of course, 5 years ago during COVID when we couldn't see each other's faces for various reasons, many times out and about in public and sometimes even among family members. And I thought about society these days and how much we text to communicate with each other and how much we Zoom and we don't see each other in person face to face. I just read a story this morning about teens who are seeking friendship via AI, an entity with no face whatsoever. Why is it so important for us to be in front of each other, to see each other's faces and in the end to seek each other's faces and to seek God's face?
Well, I think there's an intimacy that's involved there, and it's a very communal thing, is that, you know, God tells us to seek his face because he wants that sort of relationship with us, spending time with him. And isn't that so important for us, you know, in this society where we've really sort of all become, I don't know, we're hibernating now, and we're hiding away hermits in our little homes, in front of our smartphones or our TVs, our Apple TVs. And, you know, we were talking about this, recently with the passing of Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time in America where we had maybe at most 13 TV channels. Everybody basically in this country shared the same cultural experiences together. And those became the talking points at school or work or wherever we might be at the Little League games. And we don't have that anymore. As a result of all of that, we've really sort of isolated ourselves.
Todd Starnes, one final question. A lot of the chapters, a lot of the devotions in Star Spangled Blessings, mentions perhaps people being, I don't know, embarrassed a bit by their religion or trying to hide their religion or the limitations of religious freedom in the country at various entities. Are you at all encouraged by what you've seen, I guess, the past few years when it comes to Supreme Court rulings regarding religious liberty issues and what we've seen the past 6 months or so in the second Trump administration when it comes to people sort of reestablishing and being proud again to display their religious beliefs?
I've been very encouraged, and I don't really know how much of it is influenced by the politics of the day, but there is something happening in the country, and we've seen this within the Generation Z crowd,
mm-hmm.
where younger kids, the younger side of Gen Z, they are embracing the faith, not of their parents or their grandparents, but of their great-grandparents. I mean, they're going back to the traditional values that were sweeping across the nation during Eisenhower's presidency. And I think we've seen that in church attendance. We've seen that in young people that are getting married a lot earlier now than that they had been. And I do wonder if the pendulum just, you know, swung too far to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are just now pushing back against the cultural chaos that's been out there. So I'm incredibly encouraged. You know, the caution is that we can't rely on president administrations to dictate, you know, the spiritual condition of
right.
the country. You know, that's up to each and every single one of us. And that's really the message of the book and just a way every day to just have a reminder about why God is blessing America and what our part is in all of it.
Todd Starnes, you can find him at toddstarnes.com. Also catch his radio show as well, along with co-author Michelle Cox, this wonderful new book, Star Spangled Blessings, Devotions for Patriots. Todd, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Scott, it's always fun. Thank you so much.
Up next, Corey Moss from Hillsdale's History Department joins us. We'll talk about Protestant reformer and martyr Robert Barnes. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It was on the streets of Pinar del Rio. You remember the smell of her hair. You thought, white gardenias. You shared dinner, then coffee. Then came that beautiful aroma of the cigar. You forgot her name, but not the cigar. La Roma de Cuba, mi amor. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website, havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday Mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
I'm here today with my insurance agent of about 12 years, Kevin Wall from Allstate. He's located at 2861 Churn Creek Road. Now, Kevin, what is it that has made you such a successful insurance office for, what, almost 30 years?
Yes, actually, 28 years, June 1st. And the fact that we genuinely care about our clients and want to do what's best to make sure we take care of their insurance needs.
I remember when my daughter had her accident, and Allstate and your office was right there to help with the claims process.
As I mentioned, we have great staff and customer service. We really do go the extra mile. And with Allstate, if you qualify for the California Good Driver discount, you can most likely get started with as low as 1 month down.
Now, do people have to wait until their renewal to get started?
No, absolutely not. Whether your policy is coming up for renewal now or if you're midterm, it really doesn't matter. We can usually get you covered within about 15 minutes from when you call. Whether it's auto, home, or anything else that needs insured, if you just give us a call or text us, we'd be glad to help you. 530-222-2306.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You can also find us wherever you get your audio, including YouTube. We're joined by Dr. Corey Moss. He is Chairman and Associate Professor of History here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Moss, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We discussed today Robert Barnes and the Reformation. Robert Barnes might not be a name that is familiar to a number of our listeners. So generally, before we get into things, who was Robert Barnes and why is he still worth talking about today?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to convince anybody that he's still worth talking about, but maybe just a brief introduction to who he was and why he might be worth at least knowing about. So he was Robert Barnes, born in 1495 in Norfolk, England. At the age of 10, he was sent down to Cambridge, where he entered the Augustinian friary there and began attending university. During the early ferment of the Reformation in Germany, he was among that early group in England, in Cambridge especially, picking up Luther's works, reading them. He becomes influenced by them. is responsible for a provocative sermon in 1525, which leads to his imprisonment for a few years before a quite dramatic escape, which sends him over to continental Europe. He spends some time in Wittenberg with the Lutheran reformers there, and is eventually called back to England by the king himself, and is going to, over the course of about 6 years, be one of the primary negotiators between the English ecclesiastical and political establishment and that in Lutheran Germany. Hmm. He's got a minor but not insignificant role to play in the early Reformation in England, especially as it relates to the continental reformers. And then his death in 1540, quite early, given that he was only born in 1495, and potentially unexpected, the king who had called him back and made him a royal chaplain and royal ambassador is actually going to have him burned to death on ambiguous charges. I think it's probably safest to say that the unspoken charges were heresy. So he's going to have a number of claims to fame. In the years after his death, he's going to be one of those who is championed as a martyr for the Protestant faith. So John Fox, who writes that influential Book of Martyrs, is going to include a substantial section on Barnes. Among Lutherans, he's well known because he's one of those rare English Lutherans. There's a brief period in the 1530s when, depending on where you're standing, it kind of looks like England is going to enter the Lutheran fold. So Thomas Cranmer, Thomas Cromwell have some very explicitly Lutheran leanings on some doctrines maybe we can talk about later. And so he's known among Lutherans as, you know, like that one chance that we had, and he was kind of steering the ship, or at least influencing its steering towards Lutheranism.
Dr. Corey Moss, you've done your own research and writing on Robert Barnes. What has that been like?
One of the things that I've tried to do in my own work on Barnes is suggest that he should be remembered perhaps first, as he was especially known in his day, simply as a preacher.
Hmm.
So this is a thing that he is known for among all of his contemporaries, friends and foes alike. So, for example, it's a sermon that leads to his imprisonment in 1526. He's going to be imprisoned twice more for sermons that draw the ire of various establishment figures. But among early English Protestants, he is consistently, for example, named in wills as this is the guy I want preaching my sermon. The King of France, even though Barnes spends no time in France, has heard about his preaching, and various other people throughout continental Europe have heard of it. They say good things about it. So that's one of the things that we should remember him for. But then the other thing that I've tried to draw attention to in my work is that I suggest that Barnes approaches history and theology and the writing of both in a largely novel fashion. And he's at the forefront of what we're eventually going to call historical theology.
Mm-hmm.
So a very conscious attempt to think about theological issues through the lens of history and talk about how practices, rites, and doctrines have changed. So even after he's long forgotten as a preacher and as a martyr and in fact as a person, some of his written works are going to be used, cited, ransacked for the next century and a half all across Europe.
Tell us a bit more about his relationship with people like Cromwell, people like Martin Luther. How did that affect his work?
In a number of ways. Early in his career, I suppose we might think of him as a kind of independent fellow. But once he is in Germany, He goes naturally to Wittenberg because that's where we've heard about the ferment of the Reformation. He lives for at least a year with the local pastor in Wittenberg, a fellow by the name of Johannes Bugenhagen, becomes good friends with Martin Luther and Philip Melanchthon and the other Wittenberg reformers. And it becomes fairly clear fairly early on that they like one another and one another's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, Martin Luther is the giant of the early Reformation, and so Barnes is sort of mentored by him. But then, when he's called back to England, It's clear that there are people at the royal court, Thomas Cromwell, Thomas Cranmer, who are leaning in an evangelical direction because of Barnes, some of his early published writings, because of his preaching ability. Barnes is seen as a useful instrument in furthering the evangelical or the Protestant cause in England. And so he's going to be mentored by Cromwell and Cranmer as well, and they're going to get for him various commissions and put him on various boards in the English church. And so he's in kind of a tough position. He is theologically, he is committed to the doctrine of the Lutheran reformers in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
He realizes that this is not an incredibly popular theology in England. And yet the two men who are patronizing him, Cranmer and Cromwell, want him to make it more popular. So he walks this fine line. What can I get away with to keep everyone happy? And most especially, of course, the man in the background here is Henry VIII. What can I do to not make him unhappy?
Mm-hmm.
Because Henry's own theological views are notoriously ambiguous and potentially shifting at a moment's notice.
What is the story with his work, A Supplication Unto the Most Gracious Prince?
Yeah, it's two stories, actually. So as the title suggests, it's a supplication to the prince, that is to say, Henry VIII.
Mm-hmm.
So Barnes writes this while he's in Germany in exile after his first imprisonment. And the first big chunk of the book is effectively a letter to the king saying, please let me come back. Yeah, I'm not really a heretic, and I think that we can work together. But then appended to that is a series of, I guess we would call articles, doctrinal articles, in which he says, you know, here's the proper understanding of the doctrine of justification. Here's the proper understanding of human free will. Here's the proper understanding of the Lord's Supper. And probably, as it was originally published, that second half was meant to complement the first half, mm-hmm. which was the real goal, to bring Barnes back into the king's favor and allow him to return to England. But subsequently, it's the second half that I think has just proved most influential. It's actually been described as nearest thing the English Reformation comes to a work of systematic theology, in which you just sort of walk through each of the doctrines of the church, explaining what ought to be believed and why. I'll say this. I don't want to oversell Barnes' importance. It doesn't get a ton of traction.
Mm-hmm.
It's republished in 1534 in a revised edition, and it's republished in English a couple of other times. But because it's written in English, it has a fairly limited audience. Some of his other works written in Latin are going to be much more enduringly important because they can get an audience all across Europe.
We'll pause with Dr. Corey Moss and come back in just a moment. More on Protestant reformer and martyr Robert Barnes. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hey, it's your liberty-loving Latino amigo, Rich Valdez, host of America at Night. Weeknights, we're letting you know what's happening live all across America. We'll have newsmakers and experts coming on, talking about the hot topics of the day. Plus, in our third hour, whatever you want to talk about with open phones across America, our nightly town hall. I look forward to hearing from you on the next America at Night with me, Rich Valdez.
Weeknights from 7 to 10 p.m. on KCNR.
Hey, this is Pat Karch. This year, I'm the top Italian for Paisano Days 2025. Join us at Paisano Days. It's a great, fun-filled 2 days. Bocce. Yep, bocce live. And spaghetti dinner. And all kinds of great Italian sausages, hot dogs, cannoli, ice cream, beer, and wine. For 2 days, join us down at South City Park on Friday, September 12th and Saturday, September 13th. For more information, call me at 530-510-1903. Paisano Days.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with Dr. Corey Moss from Hillsdale's History Department about Robert Barnes, the Protestant reformer and martyr, and more about that now. Dr. Moss, is he a rabble-rouser? He ends up in prison, right? So why does he sort of fall out of favor?
Yeah, he really is a rabble-rouser, and he sort of acknowledges this on a couple of occasions. He preaches sermons, and Stephen Gardiner, one of his primary foes in the 1530s, Bishop of Winchester, he actually tells King Henry, he says, if this man continues to preach, it will be the downfall of England. The sermon that eventually leads to his final imprisonment and leads eventually to his execution is a sermon preached at Paul's Cross in London. So for listeners who might not be familiar, St. Paul's, of course, is the cathedral church in London, and Paul's Cross is an outdoor sort of preaching station.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very popular. There's a schedule of preachers throughout the year and huge audiences. Well, Robert Barnes had been scheduled to preach. Stephen Gardiner, who is one of his antagonists because he's a bishop, manages to get Barnes displaced from the schedule, and Gardiner himself preaches the sermon. Well, 2 weeks after that, Barnes is back on the schedule, and he preaches, unsurprisingly perhaps, on exactly the same text that Stephen Gardiner had preached on,
mm-hmm.
and he interpreted it in the exact opposite way. He's not shy. He's not prudent. He mentions Bishop Gardiner by name. And then at the very end of the sermon, he does something that is probably strange to most people who have sat in churches and heard sermons. He takes his glove off and he throws it on the ground as you would when you're challenging someone to a duel,
mm-hmm.
which is perhaps all fun and games, except this is shortly after the English Parliament passes what is called the Act of Six Articles. And it's often pointed to as one of those sort of shifts in Henrician policy. The Act of Six Articles, you know, specifically says, okay, we've broken with the papacy, so we're clearly not Catholic, mm-hmm. in any obvious sense, but we're also not going to become Protestant in any obvious sense. So we're insisting on the doctrine of transubstantiation. We're insisting on oral confession to priests. We're insisting on the doctrine of purgatory. We're refusing to let clergy marry. So all of these quote unquote Catholic markers. And here's the interesting thing. The official title of this parliamentary statute is an act for abolishing diversity in opinion. So this is Henry's goal. He wants everyone in England, clergy and laity alike, to be on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And what Barnes is doing in the pulpit in his very theatrical way is preventing unity.
He's executed in a public square, and if I recall correctly, he's not the only one. There's a group of I think, Lutherans and also Catholic priests.
Yeah, so this is one of the fantastic ironies of the English Reformation and Henry VIII's central role in it. Yeah, on July 30th, 1540, is when Robert Barnes is executed. He is executed by burning with two other English evangelical preachers. And on the same day, on the other side of town, three Catholic priests are beheaded on Henry's orders. My own doctoral supervisor, I can't remember the exact phrase, but he refers to it in terms of the the ecumenicity of the Henrician Reformation. So Henry is an equal opportunity persecutor, and it is a telling reminder that. You can't simply say, Henry was Catholic on this day, and then he's Protestant on this day.
Uh-huh.
Nobody's quite sure what he is, and I'm not sure Henry entirely knows what he is. So you can be a Catholic, you can be a Protestant, and chances are you're gonna get yourself in trouble. So very, very briefly, it's perhaps worth noting that the three Protestants are burned at the stake. That's the traditional punishment for heresy, which is why I said earlier that even though no explicit charges are leveled against Barnes, that the best guess is that this is a heresy charge. The three priests are beheaded. That's the traditional punishment for treason. And so it's reflective of the way that Henry thinks about these different troublemakers. Mm-hmm. Are they political troublemakers, or are they ecclesiastical and theological troublemakers?
So what's this particular issue that's being debated between the two men?
The specific doctrine that he and Gardiner are debating in their sermons, and the two men who are burned with Barnes take up the same issue in defense of Barnes, is the doctrine of justification. So how is it and why is it that human beings are redeemed and granted eternal life? And in Gardiner's sermon, he had made a bunch of distinctions, but he had effectively said that it's not merely by God's grace and by faith in that grace expressed in the saving death of Christ, but it is also partly on account of our own merits. And Barnes objected to that. And although Henry does, at various stages in his reign, offer concessions to evangelicalism, for example, the printing of the Bible in English, he never, ever gets on board with that sort of universal Protestant understanding of justification, that it's by grace alone, through faith alone, on account of Christ alone. So insofar as Henry wants everyone on the same page, with respect to that doctrine, it's not the Protestant page.
You told us a bit earlier you didn't want to oversell Barnes in some of our conversation here. So how is he remembered, and what is his influence on future of the Protestant Church?
Yeah, well, he is remembered in the years immediately after death for his preaching, for his English language treatises that are still somewhat popular in England at the time, and then simply for the fact of his death itself. Today, he is remembered almost not at all. So in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, relatively small, I guess depending on relative to what, but relatively small Lutheran denomination, he does get a day on the calendar. July 30th is remembered and commemorated as the day of his death. It's not a high holy feast day by any means. But he's not, for example, he's not on the Anglican calendar. Mm. My time in England, I think, confirmed for me that, most Christians in England have no idea who Robert Barnes is. Obviously, they know who Cranmer is because he gave them the prayer book. They probably know who Cromwell is. They certainly know figures like Thomas More. But nobody's heard of Robert Barnes. He's not remembered at all. But again, he was, I don't want to say enormously influential, but definitely influential in bringing a sort of concerted historical approach to theological questions. Now, he didn't live long enough to develop this fully, but I mentioned that his supplication is kind of a systematic theology. And yet, what he does is not simply argue from passages of Scripture that X, Y, or Z is the case. He includes Scripture, but he spends a lot of time walking through church fathers, medieval doctors, canon law, and pointing out where there is development, where there is retraction, where there is change. And then he does similar with certain practices in the church. So he spends a lot of time in almost all of his works on the question of how does the liturgy of the Mass develop? And what do those development mean for questions of doctrine and practice?
And Dr. Corey Moss, the final book by Robert Barnes is somewhat of a history book, I suppose we'd say. What's that one all about?
The last work he publishes is called Lives of the Roman Pontiffs, and it's sometimes referred to as the first Protestant history of the papacy. It's probably a little generous to call it a history in the sense that you and I would think of a history, but it's sort of a walk through the reign of each of the popes with mention of what are they known for, what changes did they introduce in terms of the governance of the church, the rites of the church, the doctrines of the church. And these various publications are going to become sources that future authors can dip into as a sort of, you know, encyclopedia of when these things happened. So he's remembered less as a person, a preacher, a theologian per se, and remembered as a kind of a compiler of what we would today call historical theological resources.
Hmm. Dr. Corey Moss, Chairman and Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College, as we talk about Robert Barnes and his role in the Reformation. Dr. Moss, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Joseph Postel from Hillsdale's Politics Department, Todd Starnes, co-author of the new book, Star Spangled Blessings, and Dr. Corey Moss from Hillsdale's History Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us.
This show's for educated voters, not for people that voted for Kamala Harris.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest
every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1468.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.